You're listening to a podcast from 702.
It's 14 minutes past two, and we continue the conversation around COVID-19. We talked about trust earlier on, but now with the team from Africa Check, with Kate Wilkinson, the deputy editor at Africa Check, we're looking at how you can tell what's fact from fiction. Because at the moment, all over the world, authorities are quite concerned about the levels of misinformation that is circulating. We talked about this last week, in fact, with Emma Sadlier, about the fact that you can go to prison for up to 6 months if you spread misinformation, if your intention matters as well, around COVID-19 in light of the national state of disaster. But today, Kate has some great advice on how we can distinguish between fact and fiction. Good afternoon, Kate.
Hi, Zanya. How are you doing?
Oof. I think I'm still kind of grappling with 402.
I think I'm in the same spot.
We were getting used to being in the 200s. And now we need to, like, you know, get our minds around being in the 400s.
Absolutely. And I think that we need to take a moment to acknowledge the feelings that we're feeling at the moment, maybe the fear, the panic, some anxiety, and just recognize that this actually has quite a big impact on the type of information that we share and who we share it with.
Yes, yes, at times never been more important. You know, we've had this coming, as far as misinformation is concerned, for a while now, whether it was around the US elections, whether it was around Brexit, you know, it's been a source of conversation. But just how much damage this sort of damage can cause needs to be demonstrated to people all the time.
Absolutely. And I think we can look back to another global health crisis that we faced a few years ago. If we look back at the Ebola outbreak in 2014, mm-hmm. we saw a lot of panic. We saw a lot of fear and people were very concerned. And of course, whenever there's a global health crisis, we are always aware of the lives that could be lost because of the disease or because of the virus. But we also need to pay attention and think about the lives that could be lost because of the misinformation.
Yeah.
And there was quite a stark example of this during the Ebola outbreak in 2014, where it was reported by the World Health Organization that there were actually two deaths that were linked to people taking a cure for Ebola. There were messages being sent around that if you drank enough salt water, you'd either be cured of Ebola or it would prevent you from getting it. And as a result, people actually died.
Yeah.
So I think that's a very stark reminder of the fact that, you know, with the disease, with COVID-19, people's lives are at risk and we need to take the necessary precautions. But false information, messages being sent which aren't true, can have a just as dangerous outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially when we look at the flow of information, you know, often it comes from people we know, people that we say are family and friends, and also in that content, people purporting to have some sort of proximity, you know, to the situation, and that they're bringing you something different, something unique that the authorities aren't telling you about. You know, there's a way of getting into our minds and for us to accept it.
Absolutely. And that's why we've actually just today published a guide for people to help the average citizen, the listeners on this show, try and sort fact from fiction when it comes to sharing information about the new coronavirus and COVID-19.
Okay.
And the reason that we've published this is actually because no matter how hard we try, we can't fact check everything.
Mm-hmm.
There will always be new messages. There will always be new voice notes. There will always be new information being shared and tweeted. And we can do our best to fact check the most dangerous or the most popular messages.
Mm-hmm.
But what we need to do is actually empower the public and give them some skills and the knowledge so that they can start fact-checking for themselves and they can start playing an important role in their community, whether that community is a WhatsApp group or it's your family or it's your neighborhood, so that you can actually spread good information and stop bad information.
Yeah. So what are the tips?
So the first tip is a really easy one, but it's probably the hardest one to do. And I think with the latest announcement of our numbers with 402 confirmed cases, my first tip and what we're asking people to do is just to pause. We are so programmed and wired to receive information and instantly share it.
Even before we've thoroughly looked through it, we're already forwarding, you know. There was a light moment where a mother actually forwarded a text with a link in it to family and friends, which also had to do with the movement of people because she's here, but this was speaking about movement of people in the UK. And she shared it with friends, but the link, in fact, was taking you to a porn site. So just quickly sent it out. And that was a hard lesson too, even though it's of a humorous nature. It just demonstrates how we just so quick to pass information on without pausing, as you say, and interrogating what's in front of us.
Absolutely. And I actually got sent that same message. Oh. So it has been doing the rounds. And I think it's also important to realize that when we feel scared and when we feel angry, we're actually quite vulnerable. Our defenses are down. We are in a fight or flight state of mind. And we may share things, say things, or do things that we wouldn't normally do when we were considering something with time and with reason.
Yeah.
So I think I would imagine around the country now, people's WhatsApps are going crazy. People are tweeting, people are posting on Facebook because we are scared. It is not wrong to feel scared, but we need to recognize those feelings and how it's going to influence what we're sharing. And I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing a lot of voice notes being shared about lockdowns being announced tonight.
Yeah, I did already yesterday. My producer just got one now, in fact. So, yeah. It's ferocious.
And those are going to start being shared more and more, the more scared and panicked people become.
Yeah.
So we're not telling you not to feel scared or worried, but realize that you may share information that you wouldn't share normally if you had your normal mindset to interrogate and think about it. So that's the first step.
Pause.
And recognize what you're feeling and how that can affect what you're sharing.
All right. What's the next thing we do?
The next thing is to just think about the source. We are getting so much information. I'm even getting it on WhatsApp, in my emails. And the next thing you can do once you've paused is to just talk to people. If your aunt or your friend sends you a message, ask them how they know what they know. Ask them where they got it. And if it isn't easy to figure out where information is coming from or who created it, then that's a huge red flag. And this is often the case with voice notes that we see. We have someone sounding very certain, very authoritative, saying there's going to be a lockdown or saying that he spoke to someone in government and this is what's going to happen. But they don't identify themselves. They don't say who they are or where they work. And that's an enormous flag that the person who's making this doesn't necessarily want to be associated with it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can't find out who's created something or where a message comes from, I would really think twice about sharing it on.
Absolutely. Just the other day, I saw a Twitter post saying it cost the South African government 130,000 rand to bring every South African who was in Wuhan back home. And this is because the Chinese government was keeping these South Africans as hostages. And this was money paid for ransom. I thought, how ridiculous is that? So reported, of course, that account to Twitter. That was what I did to it. But then looking at the comment section, there was a sizable amount of people who were outraged, right? That how dare China do this, considering that the virus comes from there and so on. And then there were other people as well, a small number, even though they were there, who said, show us your source. This is fake news. This surely is false information.
That's great to hear.
Yeah. So there was a mixture, but of course, those that believed it didn't pause to look at the other responses from other people. And they're walking around believing what they believe. And often when you do ask show us the source. Tell us where you got this information from. That's where you'll get stonewalled. That's where the person will stop. They won't engage you any further, which demonstrates, I think, it's glaring that it's not backed up by anything credible.
And you're so right that comments and replies to tweets can often be so useful in getting a broader picture of whether people think information is suspect. So if you see something and it's been retweeted or reshared, have a look at the comments, have a look at the tweets, because often you'll get some good clues and hints as to whether this is something that you should actually be passing on.
So that's the second one. Pause for a moment, then consider the source. What's the third thing?
The third thing is find a trusted source. And often we say this, and it sounds like it's simple, but it can be quite overwhelming and it can feel quite daunting when you have something and you're not sure if it's true and you want to find somewhere to confirm or to find out if something is false. But what I would do is when it comes to information about the new coronavirus, about COVID-19, there are a few places that you should be going if you want to verify information. When it comes to numbers globally, you should be going to the World Health Organization. They are releasing situation reports every single day with confirmed numbers. In South Africa, if you want local numbers, you can look at the Department of Health. They're releasing information on Twitter, on their websites, as well as the NICD. Those are your best bets. Mm-hmm. Find their handles, save them, save the URLs so that you can quickly access them. And then, of course, if you want fact-checking content in South Africa, pretty much now we're almost fact-checking coronavirus 24/7.
Yeah.
It's what we're focusing on at the moment. And we've actually published a live guide, which is a resource that lists every single one of the fact checks that we've done about the coronavirus. So if you see something and you want to check if it's true or false, there's a good chance we fact-checked it. So you can look at our live guide. We've now tweeted the link. It's also on our front page. And you'll most likely find your answers there.
Absolutely. And let's get to the work of clarifying some of this misinformation. There's a post that's doing the rounds at the moment. It's a commonly shared myth on social media that if you hold your breath for 10 seconds or more, you don't have COVID-19. So what is the verdict? What is this one about?
So the verdict, let's get this out of the way. This message is not true.
Yeah.
The claim that it's making that if you can hold your breath for 10 seconds, you don't have COVID-19, that is false. And my dad actually phoned me last week because he received this message.
Oh, man.
And he thought that it was a way that he could stay safe and know he was sick. And I had to tell him that it wasn't true.
Mm.
No one is immune from falling prey to this sort of misinformation. And we also have to treat people who do believe these sort of stories with kindness and with understanding, because we're all feeling scared and we're all looking for some help to understand. But like I told my dad, and I'm telling you now, this is not true. And there are a few reasons for it.
Yeah.
The first is that if you hold your breath, you could have the coronavirus and you could have very mild symptoms and you will be able to hold your breath for 10 seconds. And what this could result in is people who are infectious believing that they don't have the coronavirus and they could continue to go out into public and continue to infect other people. So that's the first risk. The second problem is that this test can produce false positives. So you might not be able to hold your breath because you have some other problem with your lungs.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe considering how stressful and anxious the current situation is, you might not just be able to hold your breath because you're stressed and anxious.
Yeah.
So it could lead to people who don't have the coronavirus thinking that they do have the coronavirus and then putting a bigger burden and strain on the healthcare system as they then go and try to seek more testing.
Yeah.
So if you get this message, respond, say it's not true, and point the person who sent it to you to a more reliable source.
Right. So that settles that. And I think, Kate, you've been very helpful in giving us a reminder on what to do when we're confronted with this information. And, you know, looking at a tweet from someone since the bulletin at 2 o'clock about the numbers being at 402. And, this tweet says, "These people are just shuffling numbers. I haven't seen a single test kit used for screening. Can they confirm that the 420, maybe they meant to say 402 people are positive? Personally, I believe it's all guesswork so they can achieve the 60% infection stats they predicted and to quarantine the poor." You know, I'm so upset reading something like this because of a number of reasons. If we're scared and we're confused, it's okay. I think we need to acknowledge that we're scared and confused, right? And whatever we grasp or we try and hold on to as a means to comfort ourselves, we need to be careful of what it is that we hold on to as a raft, for instance, for our fear and our confusion, because it's not always the safest thing. We need to remember to be critical, to think critically. Why would the government want to shuffle numbers on something that is about life and death? Why would there be a question? Why would you want to see a test? You know, so it is, it's disappointing to see that sometimes the mind or our choice, in fact, let's not remove the person's agency, that our choice can steer us in a direction that doesn't serve us at all. For this person who tweeted this, this does not serve you. It doesn't serve people on your timeline. It doesn't serve the efforts to flatten the curve. Not at all. I'm just upset, Kate.
I know. And I think this is not a sprint. We are going to be dealing with this, and we're going to be dealing with trying to sort false information from accurate health to come. And I would really urge all your listeners to encourage their friends and their family to actually realize that they can do something. We can feel incredibly helpless at this time, but we can do something. We can help stop misinformation spreading, and we can help spread accurate information. Okay. And we can actually have quite a big impact and help people access good information if we all play our small role.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Kate.
Thanks, Azza, and I'll chat to you soon.
Yes, that's Kate Wilkinson. They're doing lots of COVID-19 work at the moment, clarifying all sorts of misinformation that is making the rounds. We're not experts, of course. We're not medical doctors. We cannot purport to be. And all of us, as we comment on these matters, need to make sure that we use credible information. And that's why a fact-checking exercise is so important.